my friend Elizabeth. We were at the Tommy Robinson rally. Obviously with that, there were counter protesters as well. The organisers, quite tall men with very prevalent neck beards, and also very screechy women telling us to F off. There was a point where they were all crowding us, they were calling us fascists. So you can see in the video, like, he was trying to block the camera and he had, like, on both sides. It was insane. So I went up to the police. Can you not do something about this?
They're literally harassing and intimidating.
You can see that they're, like, harassing us. They were just like, well, if you don't like it, why don't you just go elsewhere? Why wouldn't they do anything? It completely shocked me.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, as you all know, the right, the conservatives, the people that are standing up against little girls being murdered by foreign knifemen and whatever, those people are evil and far right, and the left are paragons of virtue. But I have a very special guest today who has just gone through a really rather traumatic experience at the hands of the left, which perhaps casts a true light on the kind of people they are. And this is the political commentator, journalist, and Vox Populi YouTuber, Miss Jess Gill. Jess, hello.
Hello, thank you so much for having me on.
Pleasure to meet you. Pleasure to see you again. Okay, so Jess, I saw a video with you and your friend Elizabeth, and frankly, you looked just in shock. I mean, in shock. So what on earth happened?
Yeah, I should have known what to expect, in all honesty. I don't know why it was such a surprise to me. It was very Kafkaesque. It was very anarcho-tyrannical, if you will. So basically, me and my friend Elizabeth, we were at the Tommy Robinson rally just to interview protesters. It wasn't really about Tommy Robinson for me. We just wanted to see what people thought, why they're there, especially because it's such a sensitive issue about, like, mass immigration.
So hang on, Saturday 1st of Feb, there was a Tommy Robinson rally in central London.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously with that, there were counter-protesters as well. And what was really interesting to me is that the counter-protest started before, at 11:30, in a completely different spot of London. And then the Tommy Robinson protest was in Westminster. So that was really crazy. So we decided to go to the counter-protesters first.
Where was that? That
was near Piccadilly Circus, I think. It was a big group of people, around 200 people, I would say. And we were just interviewing people. My idea was to try and get them to be like, I wanted to ask them if they thought Elon Musk was a fascist. And then I would say, why? Why is Elon Musk a fascist? And then they were like, oh yeah, he was Sieg Heiling. I wanted to be like, what's that? So, you know, try and bait them into doing the my heart goes out to you symbol, just as a bit of fun, as a joke. But we didn't get that far because every time we went up to people, the organisers of the event, which were made up of these quite tall men with very prevalent neck beards if they weren't covered in COVID masks, and also very screechy women telling us to F off, which was quite an experience. And me and Liz, bear in mind, like, we're just young women here. We're not going to cause any harm. We're literally asking people, can we interview you? And if they said yes, we would. If they said no, we wouldn't. And the people who were interviewing, they were keen to speak. I think one of the organisers went, you know, they're from, like, a far-right media organisation, which we know is nonsense. But the protesters were like, yeah, I want to speak to these people. And in all honesty, I think we probably got better content after what happened compared to if we just spoke to people. So in a way, obviously I'm not thankful to them, but in the point of messaging and in point of pushing a political point, if we wanted to get across that the left are mentally ill and can't handle political protest, I think that is the best propaganda for that, in all honesty. It's ridiculous. So we went to, we interviewed people, and then there was a point where they were all crowding us, me and Elizabeth. They were telling us to F off, go back to the protest. They were calling us fascists. And I was just baffled. I was like, can we not have a conversation? Why are you against free speech? Why are you against...
You were physically mobbed, mobbed, the two of you, by these people.
Yeah, they were pushing us. Yeah. You can see in the video, like, he was trying to block the camera and he had, like, on both sides. It was insane. And to be fair, it's like, I don't know, I feel like as... I don't know if I'd use the insult as a journalist, but as a journalist, you kind of expect stuff like that. But it is harassment. It is. I think it's battery or something like that. You know, if this was just me walking along the streets and somebody did that, that would not be normal, and it shouldn't be treated like normal, even if it is just as a protest. So I went up to the police and I said, can you not do something about this? They are, you can see that they're like harassing us. You can see that these grown men are surrounding us, and the police, they're asking us questions. They were just like, well, if you don't like it, why don't you just go elsewhere? And just like, well, isn't your job to like protect the peace? Isn't your job to like protect us if something happens like that? If there's a crime being committed, why are they victim blaming? I was honestly baffled by that. I thought, you know, the protesters were right there. The police could see that they were there. You know, why wouldn't they do anything? It completely shocked me.
Did the police call you far right? Did the police?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So, at first, they were just like, well, from the protesters' perspective, you're a far right or right-wing media outlet. And I was like, we're not far right. We are right-wing, but what's wrong with that? You know, we should be allowed to talk to people. And then later on down the line, because this was like a 15-minute long conversation, they told us first to move away from the protest, and then the organisers came up to us again and started harassing us, telling us to F off, calling us names, right in front of the police, and the police did nothing.
What names did they call you?
They were just called fascist, far right. I think they called us ugly at one point. So I'm not too sure. I was too focused on the police. Liz was there engaging with the protesters. I think she blew him a kiss at one point to try and make fun of him, which was good on Liz. But yeah, so we're on the other side. And the police, their tone changed so much when they turned on the camera. They turned on the filming equipment and they were like, we are saying that this is against the law. You're violating the Public Order Act or whatever. The female, probably lesbian, let's be honest, police officer was like, you are far right. And I was like, I never said I'm far right. She literally said, I was like, no, I didn't. That's quite an accusation. Why are you calling me far right? That's insane. And I felt quite offended by that because they're putting us in this box, you know, and they want to like diminish us because in their mind, if we're right wing at all, never mind far right, we're basically Hitler at that point. We're basically the enemy. So I don't want to be perceived as that.
So the WPC accused you of violating the Public Order Act by being there.
Yeah, we're disturbing the peace or something like that. Just me and Liz asking people questions, not even controversial questions.
Extraordinary. So how did, because often I've spoken to other people about this when you're with these left wing people and they can be perfectly normal and perfectly nice, and then something triggers them, and then you sort of see it in the eyes, and then it all collapses into hell really, really very quickly. And I've spoken to a number. So what actually happened? You were going along, it was fine. You were talking to people, they were happy to talk to you. So what was it? Can you remember what was it that sort of triggered the switch where suddenly they regard you as wicked and demonic?
Oh, it wasn't. The people we were interviewing, they were fine throughout it. Like, at most, I think the one guy just stopped speaking to us after the organisers came. It was the organisers who, I've been told later on that they're a part of, like, the Socialist Workers' Party or something, and they were very friendly with the police as well. It was the organisers who were being very antagonistic towards us. The people who we were speaking to were actually fine. And, you know, while I disagree with the fact that, you know, capitalism is causing racism and all that kind of stuff, you know, they were fine to speak to us. It was just the organisers who were crowding us, who were pushing us, wearing COVID masks to obviously hide their identity, calling us all sorts of stuff. They were the issue.
So the organisers recognised who you were?
So first I went with John Wong, who runs Vox Populi, but they knew him right off the bat because obviously he's done work with, he used to work for the Low Seaters, and I think he's done work before with Tommy Robinson. And he was just filming me. Like, he wasn't the one on camera or anything. He was just filming me. Yes, this Asian man with purple hair is obviously, you know, the next Adolf Hitler, obviously. But they were just like, no, we know who you are. You need to leave. So then I was like, okay, I'll go with Liz then. I'll go with Liz next. So we went around the back, me and Liz. And then they came up to us again, being like, we told you to leave. Leave. And I was just like, no, like, it's not your private property. You know, what right do you have to tell us to go away?
Who was telling you to leave?
The organisers, and then the police eventually.
Right, okay. And you said, I think, so Joggenwall, that's the guy with the sort of purple hair.
Yeah,
the Oriental
yeah.
chap that used to work for Lotus. Is that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was it? Yeah, okay. I think you said in the thing I saw that you put online on Twitter that you got the impression that the police knew and indeed were on pally terms with the left-wing protesters.
Yeah, so Liz saw this. I didn't actually see this, but she was very certain in the fact that they were saying, like, oh, yeah, it's good to see you again. They were speaking to the protesters as if they were friends. And again, it's clear, just by the line of questioning with me and Liz, like, if I go up to a police officer and I'm being, like, I'm being attacked, you know, I'm being harassed and insulted and abused here, can you do something about it? I would think the appropriate response would be go over to the people who are doing the harassment and tell them off. But no, we were the ones getting told off. We were the ones being like, well, you shouldn't be here then. Like, what? In what other circumstance would that be okay? Like, if that was any other crime, you know, if it was like domestic abuse or something, it's like telling the woman just like go away, you know, it's like telling the woman, you know, if you don't like it, just leave. Like, it's ridiculous.
They're saying essentially, they're saying you're provoking them. You're provoking
yeah.
them. Whereas legally, you have the right to be there. You have the right to say what you like, and the police should protect that. They should protect your right to A, be there, and B, say things that are legal within the law. And what they're saying is no. You're provoking them. Your fault.
Well, you think so, but I think I'm not an expert in the law here. I probably should read up on it if I intend to do some more stuff like this. But apparently we were, like, under protest. There is no freedom of speech. The police can kick you out. Because I asked him, I was like, okay, under what circumstance would I be able to go to this protest and interview people? And they were like, well, you need a press pass. And I was like, okay. So then would I be able to? And then they said, even then you wouldn't be able to under certain circumstances if you were, like, causing outrage or something. But again, isn't the point of protest, you know, ideas first to, you know, convince people, to persuade people, rather than just this, like, massive mob of people who, if they're not persuading, are they just meant to intimidate people? Like, I honestly don't understand the point of protest if you're not allowed to converse with people.
Well, I suppose they've deliberately kept the counter protesters apart in order to from the protesters in order to stop violence, essentially. So presumably there are some rules within the law whereby they can tell people that are from the other side, which, let's face it, you are, not to come up and incite problems with the other side. I guess that's the case. I was once walking from, I was at the British Library. This is in about 2003.
When I was born. So
when you were born, yeah. Good God. I was walking down the road near the British Library, and there was a BNP protest against about white teenagers that had been killed by foreigners on one side of the road. And then there was I think at the time they were called Anti-Nazi League, protest on the other side of the road, now Hope Not Hate, whatever. I was just walking along, and so I started off on one side of the road, and I was talking to the leftists and whatever on one side of the road. And I just got, I must have, 04 it must have been, actually, no, it must have been January 04. And I was wearing this Lenin badge, which I got from St. Petersburg, where I'd been about a week earlier. And then I crossed the road, and I was talking to the BNP type people, and then a police officer came up to me, and what he obviously spotted the Lenin badge, and he said, "I have already made it clear to you, sir, stay on your side of the road." And I was like, "What? We made it quite clear," and he made me go back over the road. And I realised later it was because I had this Lenin pin on my jacket, so sort of public order act and all that.
I never have any time. I'm extremely disorganised. Things basically overwhelm me. I don't know why this is. It's probably some sort of genetic thing. I'm basically present-oriented, a fast life history strategist. I really should find out more. And in order to do so, I should probably read this book, Blueprint, by Robert Plomin. It's a fantastic book, and it looks at the genetics of our psychology, the genetic reasons why we have the kind of personalities we have, why we have the kind of intelligence we have. Maybe that would help me make sense of why I'm like I am. I should read that book. But the problem is, as we've established, I never have any time. So I don't really see how I can read it. Or so I thought, until I discovered Legion.com. What Legion.com does is it takes the most basic and interesting books, including Blueprint by Robert Plomin, and it summarises them into just 25 minutes, and then it allows you to listen to those books. That's my problem solved. Legion.com. And if you sign up today with the code TJH, then you will get 10% off. Legion.com. All the base knowledge from your phone straight into your brains.
So were you, I mean, they surrounded you. Were you, like, physically jostled?
They were pushing. Again, it's tough to... Again, I want to give people the benefit of the doubt here. I doubt if the shoe was on the other foot, they would. But, again, they were physically around us. They were surrounding us. And it's hard to tell what was intentional and what was just because they were up close and in our personal space so much. And there was one point where this guy was literally close to me. And because another person's close to me, and I accidentally pushed into him a bit, it's like accidentally, because there's another person on my side who's like, don't touch me. It's like, I'm not trying to. Like, I don't want to be in this situation. I just want to interview people. And so he's like, don't touch me, which was ridiculous. But yeah, a few people pushed us. They do this thing where they block the camera, which, again, I think there should be a law against, you know, touching or damaging personal property, especially with the lens as well, like, not to get into that stuff, but I think there should be a law against it if there's not already. So it wasn't like they were punching us or anything, but it was definitely uncomfortable, and it was definitely probably illegal, and the police should have done something about it, especially, again, we're just two girls just trying to get some interviews, just trying to ask people, not even anything provocative, just asking people, you know, what are you doing here? Maybe a bit of, like, jokey video content, but nothing too outrageous. So I don't see why that's a problem. But the fact's, like, you know, you're not allowed on the opposite side. Again, we're not going to do anything. And I think that's a testament to the worries of freedom of speech and the worries of people who are attending these protests. Because, again, if you're the most politically active, surely you should be able to have a conversation with people from the opposite side. Like, I'm fine with having a conversation. I'm sure you are, Ed. I don't get these people who see someone else from the opposite side and think, you know, they need to be destroyed. They need to, you know, be silenced, be censored. And the fact that that's a situation, the fact that that's a concern, I think that's the real issue, not me and Liz going up to people asking questions. That should be the main concern.
They're deeply, deeply mentally ill people, and they don't deal with whatever their problems are. I mean, we've all got problems. You know, we've all got bad things we've been through in life. I mean, my parents, for example, live in an extremely hard water area. Now, that might not sound like much, but that means you get limescale, and that could add as much as £10 a year to their water bill. Mm. We've all got problems. and they don't deal with these problems. They externalize them through drama. They externalize them through doing dramatic things like getting involved in protests and whatever else, so they can feel that they're moral and they don't have to deal with their internal conflicts and self-loathing. I mean, that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
so, you know,
I was going to say, it's hard for me to understand, because I couldn't imagine just going up to somebody and telling them to F off and call them a fascist. Like, that's just not in my psychology. I would love to understand, and I wonder if you have any explanation of that, Ed, of why people are like that.
Well, because they are full of all of these negative feelings, and they deal with that by adopting a sort of a false self where they're perfect, and the thing that makes them perfect is their morality. And you're questioning that morality, essentially, and you're questioning them. You're questioning how perfect they are, and they can't deal with that. So they see you as very, very bad, and they have to get rid of you. And you'd get the same response, I think, and I have done when I did fieldwork when I was younger, from sort of fundamentalist Christian cults. You'd get the same, literally the same kind of eye glazing, which is a way of making you, and the way that it suddenly just tips because they're triggered, and you would get that. It's just that, and then before long you're so evil that you have to be mobbed. I mean, these are the kind of people, if it was the 16th century, they'd burn you, they'd kill you. If they could, they would do so. But they don't. And what was frightening is that you've got the police that have been infiltrated by these people like this, you know, this lesbian policeman you mentioned, policewoman. Well, obviously, she's going to think that she's going to take their view. She supports them. So she's not impartially enforcing the law.
Yeah, it was crazy. Well, you know, I'm probably more tall. I'm taller than the average woman, and so is Liz. But it's just so funny. I had to look down at this lesbian police officer and also this also very small man as well. And these are the people, like, telling us and, you know, shouting at us. And it's just like, if there was an actual confrontation, I don't believe that they could actually do anything.
No. I mean, what are you, about 5'8"?
Yeah, with good posture.
Yeah, 5'8" with good posture. And Liz is about the same, I think. So it's not, I mean, and yeah, and increasingly it's the policy, it's the DEI policy of the police to employ like dwarfs and morbidly obese people and whatever. And so that basically can't physically do their job. And so, you know, the old days, you know, I think you had to be at least 5'10", if not 6', to be a policeman. And then which is fair enough. And now they bring in these, it's mad. So they can't physically enforce the law. I mean, you don't get it the other way, though, do you? I have to say, I've never been. I mean, you're basically trolling. I don't mean to play devil's advocate here, but you're essentially trolling them, and you know you are.
Yeah, well, I didn't say like, oh, we were like a centrist organization. I did say we were right wing, and that's obvious. So I'm not going to lie to them. But again, like, I don't think we have to we have to appeal to their terms. I don't think I need to act like I'm the unbiased BBC in order to have an interview with the other side. It's like, why can't two people with opposing views have a conversation? Like, I just don't understand that. We're not doing anything violent. We're not harassing them. We're literally saying, can we interview them? We're getting their consent. I don't see why that's an issue.
In a way, though, from their perspective, that's even cleverer, though, isn't it?
I don't think they could get that. They don't do the same to us.
No, it's subtle. It's you are basically trolling them, but you're able to make out that, oh no, I just want to have a conversation. Whereas you know perfectly well that what has made this interesting and the reason why I'm talking to you now is because it kicked off. Like that's what makes it interesting. It's the same when I went to Oxford University and I was interviewing students outside the Bodleian Library. And what made it interesting was that it kicked off. And unfortunately, my cameraman, in his panic, deleted the footage of this overweight student, female student, you know, going mad and saying, oh, "What's this? You're eugenicists!" All this sort of thing. But that and then by the time it gets back to me, you see me like shaking. Like I couldn't believe how quickly everything had just collapsed. And suddenly, I was surrounded by a group of people telling me you're a eugenicist or whatever. So it makes good content. I kind of think you can see they've got a point. You went in there to illustrate how mentally ill they are, and it worked.
They did it better than I intended. Like, I didn't even intend it to be that entertaining. I mean, it was a bit scary, and I was a bit shaken up by it, just because, again, like, I think we've spoken about this before. I don't know, I get really shook up over the principal and the justice of it all, and I just couldn't believe what was happening. I still wanted to treat these people as rational agents, including the protesters and the police officers, and when the police officers were, like, looking at me with a straight face, being like, you're the issue here, I was just like, can we not have a conversation person to person? But no, they were just, like, these drones who just wouldn't say anything, and I was just like, can you not just see from, like, Just look with your eyes, like, what's going on here? We're two girls just trying to have a conversation, and these grown men are intimidating us, and we're the issue. Like, I genuinely did. I was just baffled.
Yeah, that's what they do. They're all cowards, and so they're the kind of people that would tell the teacher at school rather than sort it out among themselves. They're the kind of people that would get the teacher in that would in a pub. You've offended me. I'm going to go and tell the barmaid you've offended me. And try and get you thrown out of the pub or whatever. That's what they do. They tell the teacher. They're ultimately cowards, absolute cowards. I mean, I bet one-on-one you could probably take on most of the men.
I'm very asthmatic, so I don't know about that.
Oh, are you asthmatic?
Yeah. Okay. I can't walk the flight of stairs without dying without my inhaler.
Oh, dear. Oh, God. No, I once saw a friend of mine have an asthmatic fit. And it was genuinely frightening. Like, I genuinely thought he was going to die. Like, I was watching him struggle to breathe. Oh my God! Like, and eventually he managed to find his inhaler, and then it was very slow. Then it got back to normal. I was like, bloody hell! No, I don't. I would. But tell me. So not only have you been harassed by these leftists and the police, but you're saying that since you've moved to London, you've increasingly found yourself being harassed just walking about.
Yeah, again, in terms of, like, from a content perspective, all I've had to do recently is just document my day-to-day experiences living in Tottenham. And people are just, like, taken aback by the reality of it when, again, in reality, that's just every day for me nowadays. I mean, it was already bad living in Reading. There was a street in Reading called Oxford Road, and literally half the signs weren't in English. It was literally being in, like, I don't know, like, Afghanistan or somewhere. That was bad. But Tottenham is a bit of a different demographic. It's more black people instead of Asians, although you do get the fair amount of Asians. And every time I've gone out, almost every time, somebody has said something weird to me. Somebody has followed me. And somebody has just been... I've not had anyone, like, grope me or anything. Fingers crossed that won't happen. But it has just been such an experience. I had one guy, like, tell me to breathe. Maybe he was commenting on my asthma, I don't know. But he was just like, breathe. And then when I ignored him, he called me a slut for some reason. He was clearly on some kind of drug. And that's another thing as well. Every time I go to the shop, and the shopkeepers, they have to deal with this as well. And they have to deal with, like, these black people who are obviously drugged up on something, not being responsive. There was just this one guy, and bear in mind I've only been here for, like, 3-4 months. This one guy just, like, staring into the abyss. The shopkeeper's like, he's been like this for 15 minutes. I was like, excuse me, can I get past? He didn't react at all. And he was just stood there, just, like, staring. And then, like, he just, like, you know, shut up. And then he just walked out. And I was just like, that's not a mentally stable person, but obviously... You know, bringing the best and brightest into this country, as Priti Patel said.
He's an engineer or a doctor, presumably.
Oh, yeah.
that have been experimenting with his own medicines. So you're basically, whenever you go out, there's sexual harassment, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It is interesting as well, though, because, like I said, it's a very multicultural area. I wouldn't be surprised if there's no, like, white British people out, except from the pubs. They're always at the pubs. I don't know how, it must be, like, a spawning point for them, but there's always white people just outside at the pubs getting a pint. I don't know where they come from, but that's always really interesting. But no, it's not a very nice experience. And like I said, I tweeted about it, and I was just like, look, this is happening to me. I didn't even mention, like, race or ethnicity. And it annoyed so many people. Again, just noticing is enough to annoy so many people. And just saying, like, hey, I'm a young woman, I have to experience this on a day-to-day basis. Is this not an issue? And they just can't handle that. So apparently I'm a racist, I'm a fascist.
They call you a racist and a fascist for saying that?
Yeah, or they just say I'm lying. These feminists.
Oh, well. I suppose, again, in terms of the psychology of this, they... You know, their worldview is that multiculturalism is great. Their belief in that makes them feel morally superior, and you are highlighting that they're wrong. So it creates cognitive dissonance, and the way you deal with cognitive dissonance is by making the source of it shut up. And that's what they hope to do. But you're some ballsy northern lass, they're not going to do that, I guess. Did you get it? Where was it you're from? Bolton or somewhere? Where was it you're from?
Yeah, I'm from Bolton. Obviously, Bolton has its own issues. I'm from, like, a village in Bolton, which is very nice. You say hi to one another as you go down the street. So I wasn't impacted by multiculturalism at that point, except from when I went to the town centre. So this is crazy for me, just on a day-to-day experience.
And harassment in Bolton wasn't a big thing?
All you get is, like, an old man being like, hi, how's your day? And that's the brink of social interaction in where I'm from. But other than that, nothing. Except from, again, I've not been to Bolton Town Centre for an awful long time, but with the protests after the Southport stabbing, obviously they were, like, these Muslim militias. It was really upsetting to see... In my town centre, in Bolton Town Centre, with the Fred Dibner statue, who was famous for knocking down chimneys, these young Muslim men, like, all, like, lined up fighting, but running up and, you know, trying to cause issues. Like, the videos of that were really shocking to see, where I'd just go around with my friends, and now it's just completely transformed. It's very upsetting to see.
So, because Fred Dibner is, like, a symbol of Bolton, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they're basically attacking a symbol of Bolton. There's Fred Dibner, and there's who was that bloke in the Industrial Revolution that was from, the significant figure in the Industrial Revolution? He was from Bolton, wasn't he?
Oh, I don't know. We have Peter Kay as well.
Peter Kay. Oh, yeah, Peter Kay's from Bolton. No, no, what's his name? That guy in the Industrial Revolution. Samuel Crompton. Samuel Crompton, yes. And oh, come on, it's your town's history. That is shameful. Samuel Crompton, the invention of some machine in the Industrial Revolution, the I don't know what it was called, and he's Samuel Crompton. He was from Bolton, but you know, Lancashire, the engine of the Industrial Revolution, the home of the Industrial Revolution. But these people who did not contribute ancestrally to the Industrial Revolution have now taken over vast swathes of the country, and young girls are less safe. Is there anything else that's happened now that you live in a multicultural area that you've noticed is different from being in Bolton?
Oh, I don't know. It is just interesting to see the amount of people just like wandering around big groups of men. I almost got my phone stolen the other day. I could feel somebody like try and put their hand in my pocket only to find loads of like empty receipts and empty chewing gum packets from not being not being tidy, but no phone, unfortunately, for them. So that's interesting. One thing that did cause a lot of outrage, and again, I'm just trying to document it because it's all new to me, and I don't want to be desensitized to it. I saw a homeless guy with his shoes off, sleeping on the tube, and I took a picture of it. No, his face wasn't included or anything. I respect people's privacy, even the homeless. And it got like 1 million, 2 million views. And people were genuinely outraged, saying that I was the issue for being like, hey, maybe we shouldn't have homeless people sleeping on the street, on the tube, with their shoes off. And he had like designer clothes and everything as well. So, you know, I'm not sure what's going on there, but that caused lots of outrage as well.
How were you the issue? You just took a photograph on the tube.
Yeah, I was the bigot for not letting him into my house, and instead just taking a picture of him and mocking him, apparently, even though I didn't even say anything.
Well, I thought it was quite reasonable. At least he took his shoes off.
I think that's even worse, because if he passed out, then that would be one thing. But he thought it through and took his shoes off. I think that's even worse.
No, but he thought, I don't want to make the seat dirty with my shoes. I'll take my shoes off.
Is it not just a comfort thing, though? I don't want to give him too much credit.
I don't know. Well, I suppose if it was a comfort thing, why not take all your clothes off, put your pyjamas on?
I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
They did that with like a night hat.
Yeah,
and then do that. But anyway, so that's the other thing you've noticed. Why did you move to London then? Why not just stay in Reading, where it's probably cheaper?
Yeah, it was. Well, the commute was killing me, and also I thought it'd be cheaper to move to. I live in student accommodation. It's full of Chinese students. This is another aspect of multiculturalism. Although I don't fear for my safety, surprisingly, at my accommodation itself. It's a student's accommodation with like a private thing, because I was stupid. I did it last minute, and I had to pay rent up front. I had to pay 12 months of rent. I paid £1,500 a month. I had to pay 18 grand up front, which was like my savings completely gone. And I live in a tiny studio flat in some terrible place in London. It was not worth it. But it's interesting. They give us a package when we move in. And it's full of like sushi restaurants, and it's in like some kind of like Chinese, Japanese, I don't know. And you think with university as well, at least from my siblings who are a bit older than me, you know, you get drunk every night, you go crazy. And that's true to an extent if you actually go to the university and you meet people there, even though like half of those are international students who don't seem to be into the stereotypical university experience. But it's the same in here. Like, I actually don't know what the Asian students do. I think they just get sushi and get home and watch like K-pop or something. It's not the standard experience.
No. When I was a postgraduate, I got to know a load of Chinese students, and no, they don't go out and get drunk, because they can't get drunk. They have one drink, they just get quite red. So they stay in and they cook Chinese food or whatever, and that's it. That's what, and they talk, and they don't really learn English because they're with other Chinese people all the time. And So when I was at Leiden University in the Netherlands, there was this one girl, and she wasn't learning English because she had a Chinese roommate and she was with other Chinese people. And I said, right, okay, you have to only speak English for a week. If you do that, Mick Quinn, I will take you out for a lovely dinner as a reward. And then she got into our group, and then suddenly her English just like took off, because she wasn't speaking Chinese all the time. In fact, you're in the Netherlands to learn English, and they just weren't speaking it, and they had all kinds of peculiar habits, like they spitting. They quite like spitting.
And I'm not noticing that.
Spitting. Like we'd be in the kitchen, and this kid, he's a lovely guy, he's a lovely chap, this Chinese, but he just come and just gob in the sink.
Mm.
And everyone's like, why'd you do? And we explained to the Chinese, you don't do that in the West. And she's like, what do you do if you get some spit in your mouth? What do you do? You just swallow it. And she went, ugh. this was shocking to her. But no, they didn't drink or take drugs. No, that was not the done thing.
They're not bad roommates, to be fair, I would imagine. I was stupid in getting a studio thinking it would be messy if I shared a kitchen, but I actually think I would have been okay because they're actually quite tidy, aren't they?
They are very tidy. I like Chinese. They come from a long way overseas, but they're short and they're friendly and they're willing to please. They are quite tiny. That's true. And I have reasonable experiences of them. Although apparently a lot of them are being funded by the Chinese government, so they're effectively spying. They're effectively de facto spies.
Well, and I don't know who they'd be spying on. They stick to themselves an awful lot. Like this is the thing at KCL where I go, they're all incredibly cliquey. They all just stick to themselves. They just speak in their own language, and it's like. Again, I want to have a university experience. I want to be like, hello, but obviously, since I can't speak their language, and since they're all together just speaking in, you know, whatever they're on about, it's hard for me to integrate into that culture as well.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, you wouldn't really have to. But then you have chosen to go to university in London, so you're asking for trouble, as far as I'm concerned. When I went to university, my first university I went to in Durham, I remember the rent was £200 a month. Which was very reasonable, you know, 200 quid a month, 50 quid a week. That was what rent was for a student house that you share the house with three other people, so you pay 50 quid each, right? That was like a Coronation Street type terraced house, and in college it was about the same. And so you know, I was good, and then everybody was English, almost everybody, and it was you should have gone there, or somewhere else that's not even Reading, I imagine. I don't know what that was like, Reading University. But what's your next plan? What's the next event you're going to document and get yourself harassed at?
Oh, I'm not too sure. I've not got anything planned. Well, the art conference is coming up, where I will hopefully have the honour of interviewing Professor Ed Dutton, which everyone should watch out for.
Well, apparently there's this amazing after party with all kinds of funky music. I think I might be a bit too old for it, to be honest, but I might turn up for a bit of it. So that should be fun. But basically what it's interesting, the experience that you've had. I mean, it illustrates viscerally something that we know theoretically, which is that these people are seriously unstable. Well, finally, do you think there's any evidence? There's this idea now at the moment that, well, woke is kind of being, there's almost like a reaction against it because of Trump, because of Musk highlighting the grooming gangs in the UK and Southport, because apparently today Sadiq Khan removed his pronouns from his bio on Twitter or something. And you've got Mandelson and Lamy suddenly sucking up to Donald Trump, having slagged him off. So do you think our little contributions are finally working? Do you think we might be beginning to see a sort of a backlash against this?
I think if it's a backlash, it will just be... I don't think it'll be that significant, in all honesty. We're not going to have the based right-wing utopia that we would aim for. I think it will just be a return to liberalism. In the sense, it will just be like this colourblind meritocracy, perhaps, which will, in fact, actually probably favour ethnic minorities again. And I think the damage has been done already. Like, they don't have to. They've already won. And if they don't have to use pronouns all the time, I think that's a small price they would pay for their agenda and their ideology. And I think, especially with the Labour government as well, crushing down on political activists like Tommy Robinson, to give him credit, I don't see a bright future for that in all honesty.
That's interesting. So you think it's a bit like the magisterial reformation or something, where they realise it's gone too far, and in order to maintain control, we have to sort of push it back a bit. You think it's that level?
I think also wokeness has taken a different turn as well. It might not be full of like mentally ill trans people anymore, but in terms of the race stuff, well, mass immigration has already made its effect. Like Tottenham, there's no white people. I'm an ethnic minority in Tottenham. They don't have to do anything with that. And now they're just mitigating the risks with the Axel Rudi Cabana case, for example, with the grooming gangs. They're just trying to silence everyone now, and hopefully they can keep it quiet and push it through until it's the new normal. I think that's what's happening.
Well, all I can say is I hope. I hope there's indicators there that there's backlash. But the problem with backlashes is they often go too far. But anyway, thank you, Jess. I will see you all soon, chaps, and goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?